This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 6th of October, 2021. And we're seeing the energy trying to turn back to the positive late yesterday, but it sort of faded a bit and we're limping into the session this morning after a weak session overnight, I think in part driven by U.S. yields notching higher and kind of interestingly doing so in the Asian session. We'll get to that in a moment. Just want to remind folks that our quarterly outlook is out, has hit the street, so you can find that on our homepage, analysis.saxo, and we are hosting a webinar on Friday at 1 o'clock CET, where we discuss all of the themes in that outlook, and we have a chance for interactive, of course, question and answers with the team. So do tune in for that. All right, let's dive back into the market action. Very interesting to see how this series of days here in the U.S. equity market. You can see on slide 3 with the S&P 500 chart that churning back and forth, the range somewhat shrinking. So we're not getting quite to the little local highs there and not getting quite to the local lows. Again, sort of limping back mid-range overnight. Peter, what are you seeing in the overnight session? Looks a bit uninspiring for either side of the coin, bull bear. From my point of view, but you've got it a little bit later down. We talked a lot about this VIX curve, which I think is an interesting approach to looking at this market as well.
Yeah, so we have had narrower trading ranges in the last two trading sessions, and I found yesterday's rebound quite odd given the acceleration we had in U.S. natural gas. Finally, you know, pushing higher, and we had the U.S. 10-year on the move. So. I was not putting too much weight on yesterday's bounce. I think today is probably going to be a little bit more clear signal on what's going on. It's not much to report on the themes except for crypto had a field day, but that's because of Bitcoin hitting 50,000. I will say that we had earnings from PepsiCola, and the CFO's remarks on the conference call is what I found the most interesting, and that is that the number one tool for PepsiCola to address rising input costs is by hiking prices across the board, and it will start already in Q1 of next year. So it's definitely something that's coming through the pipelines. I think in terms of energy in the equity market, I think it's more interesting to look at China. China is soon coming back from holiday, but equities are trading in Hong Kong, and we have the Hang Seng Technology Index, which I think is probably the most important gauge what's really going on. And as you can see here, we're reaching some pretty critical levels, as on slide 4, by the way. And if we let go of the last support area we had a couple of weeks ago and we break through there, I mean, I think it's there's a pretty open field for Chinese equities to go lower. And then we also have this situation around the Chinese housing market, Evergrande remains in a suspension. It's halted for trading. Despite the news that it's considering selling its services part of the business, is already been announced. So why hold it? I mean, it just tells you that they're working on a restructuring. And then you had the Fantasia. Was that the name, John?
Fantasia.
You always pronounce it Fantasia. Fantasia defaulted on a bond the other day. So we now have the first default in the Chinese real estate developer sector, and that is causing downgrades across the board from different rating agencies. So I think China has moved into the shadows of this global energy crunch, but it's definitely still one of the key risks that I'm watching for further downside risk in equities.
All right, and also we have to keep an eye on the U.S. Treasury yields, which have poked up towards the cycle highs and even slightly beyond in the case of the 10-year benchmark. That's the critical part of the curve there. For equities, that in the 30-year, if you look at slide 5, you can see the poking to new highs there. And the 1.75% level, the high for the cycle back in April, the next key, I like to put up those quarter point levels. All right. It wasn't just natural gas prices that ran for another massive spike yesterday. It was also oil prices, seeing Brent notching these aggressive new highs. And WTI following suit, of course, with a spread there, but still, the highest level since 2014. Yet again, as Peter mentioned, a bit surprising to see risk sentiment trying to continue to improve when you're seeing a galloping pressure and tax on the economy in the form of higher energy prices. What's is there any update to what's going on and where the heck this is going to stop?
Well, I think where's going to stop is what we increasingly would like to know. Let's start up here on slide 9, because that's where the whole problem lies. It is a continued surge in gas prices, not only in Europe, but also in Asia. Heating the competition for supplies into the winter months has been, heating up. And we saw that since China announced that, gave that order last week to the energy companies to buy at all costs, we've seen gas prices move up by, early this morning, I think it was up around 40% in less than a week. We are up again today after a 24% jump yesterday, but some of those gains have started to just come back a little bit. But also, with a higher gas price, we're seeing higher coal prices. And just on that slide, you can see how much we're trading above the 5-to-5-year average, 7 times higher, more than 17 times higher, high in gas, 2.5 times high in coal, 4 times high in German electricity. This is a growth, growth damaging rise we're seeing here. And as you said, it is also spreading to the US. Even though the US, they are obviously they produce their own gas, but the demand for LNG will clearly surge into the winter months. As much as they can export, they will try to export, and that is also impacting domestic reserves. So yesterday, gas prices hit the highest level, I think, in more than a decade. Oil price continued to move higher on the prospect for substitution. However, and I think we have to just keep in mind, we have not seen any shortages yet. This is all driven on the fear that we will see shortages, that the weather will be cold enough to drive demand to levels that where supplies cannot continue to cope. So we just have to keep that in mind. And we're also seeing right now liquidity, especially in some of these European-based contracts, which are quite often not mostly OTC-traded products, liquidity is drying up. So that basically means market makers are probably quoting ridiculous spreads. And that means that a percentage change that we saw yesterday can fairly quickly occur, obviously in both directions. One caveat in the oil market was Saudi Arabia. After keeping production increase at this steady at 400,000 barrels for November, that helped drive the market higher on Monday. Market was somewhat disappointed that they didn't get some more. We saw yesterday Saudi Aramco lower the prices to selling price to Asia for November to the lowest since last March, and that does indicate that at a time where there's no competition from others, they are at the fact that lowering the prices could potentially indicate demand may not be as strong as the market is pricing in right now. So this market just comes with a lot of warning signs at the same time, but we need to see some easing up on the pressure on supplies. Nord Stream is not coming online anytime soon, as according to regulators, so that's not going to help us in Europe. And you can see even in China, John, we've seen some coal shipments now from Australia starting to reach the shores.
Yeah, there's an unofficial ban. I think the original policy signal was discouraging imports, not any official ban on Australian thermal coal. But now apparently some loading is taking place there. That's certainly a positive for the Aussie. All other things being equal, it's the second most important export for that country. Okay, so we saw, I thought it was a bit odd the degree to which U.S. yields continued to rise in late hours yesterday. We saw a very strong ISM services survey for September at 61.9, slightly higher than expected, and even a notch higher than the very strong number from the prior month, which was about equal. I mean, to maintain these levels above 60, you're talking about a white-hot economy. You know, the various components were okay internally. The prices paid was actually quite elevated and went up another couple of points at 77.5, I believe it was. But there wasn't a huge reaction around that. We saw U.S. yields higher, and they're higher still overnight. I don't know if that was in part on President Biden saying he was considering suspending or that the Senate could look to do an exception on the filibuster rule to get around this debt ceiling issue. What have you. That's still, of course, a massive issue going into October 18th, the supposed date when the U.S. Treasury's emergency measures run out. But let's have a look at where these U.S. Rising U.S. yields have taken us to a degree and where the strong dollar is. And it's actually a pretty mixed picture. I did a similar slide yesterday, but forgot to talk about it yesterday. But I'll talk about it today. It's on slide 7. And you see how different the spots we are in the various dollar crosses or dollar pairs. Dollar yen poking back towards the highs there would make sense for it to be even going higher still if U.S. yields stick these new highs. Eurodollar very heavy with the sense that the ECB is stuck in the mud and the lack of clarity in the political front as we await a German coalition and then possibly the French election in the spring. Sterling enjoying a bit of a bounce. I'm not sure what's driving that, except maybe the sell-off was overenthusiastic on the way down, but getting at key resistance there at 136. And then Dollar Canada, clearly the energy story and you know, driving things there, as we've seen Dollar Canada actually lower and looking rather bearish on a chart structure point of view with its latest moves there. Of course, any oil correction combined with weaker sentiment could suddenly, very suddenly change that picture. And then just to round out FX, on slide 8, I have the various trend readings. Notice the Nokki reading at 5. It's very elevated. It was going to be very sensitive to any hiccup in energy prices from here. And we had the RBNZ, so the New Zealand Central Bank out overnight, hiking as expected. Its guidance was very much in line with expectations, suggesting that everything is fully priced for now, as the Kiwi was actually lower and rates sort of the front end of the curve where the RBNZ is moving things pretty much unchanged. So interesting to see that the Kiwi sort of defaulted to the downside, a sell the fact type of reaction. Okay, Peter, I don't know if you wanted to discuss the VIX chart you put up again on slide 6. It was an interesting discussion I thought we had yesterday about the shapes of the VIX curve and the idea that in prior sell-offs, you quickly see that that VIX curve going into backwardation as the front end gets, in proper sell-offs, the front end gets really elevated relative to back contracts, and we really haven't seen that yet.
Of course, I wanted to comment on it. I just wanted to give some space to you two other guys. I think this is an important chart, and it's on slide 6. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, as you said, John. The curve actually steepened on VIX futures yesterday. That's the we currently are the orange line, and as you rightly pointed out, and you can see that in a proper, you know, more stressful correction in equities, we typically go to backwardation, and depending on the severity of the correction, you can get everything from your a normal minus 20% difference between the first and the second contract on the curve, and all the way to minus 60 and 80, as we saw back in 15 and 2020. So as I've said yesterday, I think there's plenty of ammunition or gunpowder, so to speak, lying on the floor here that can suddenly explode in our face. I don't think this correction has even started yet. It's very mild. There's not much energy yet, except for in the energy market. So I think it's the key risk for equities equity traders to watch is that the curvature of the fixed futures, and then really watch where natural gas and other energy markets are going. It's super important for risk. I also on slide 12, I wrote a piece yesterday on we have floated this idea about, you know, investing in market makers or being long a basket of financial trading firms because they naturally long volatility. And the good thing about, you know, market makers is that you don't have the negative expected returns, which you typically get on options because you pay premiums and they often, you know, expire worthless if you buy these put options on a regular basis. If you short sell with futures, it requires very much timing, and the VIX is typically in a contango, which makes it very expensive to short. And I did a little bit of a number crunching yesterday, and not to be too technical, but as you can see on slide 12, I plotted the expected distributions for daily returns in virtual financials and flow traders on a 1% percentile loss in the MSCI world. So since 2015, that has been around at 2.8% loss. So on a day where we lose almost 3%, you can see the mean expectation is actually for virtual and flow traders to remain around a zero return. And actually flow traders has almost a 60% probability of being up on the day. And that's because naturally these market makers, they widen their spreads, they earn a lot of money when they widen the spread to provide liquidity to the market in a stressful situation. And hence their value of the business goes up in these stressful times where volatility goes higher. So it's definitely something that is worth considering. And as Sting said on an intro call this morning, it is still quite cheap to hedge your portfolio. So it isn't too late to take to reduce some of your market exposure in equities. So that's I think the main message.
Yeah, and not very expensive to hedge in FX volatility terms either. I want to talk to you about the Tesco situation in a moment, because I want to link that with an interesting speech from Prime Minister Boris Johnson later today. But let's round off the commodity space, Ola. We're talking about other commodities. They're trying to doing their best to get into the limelight here. And one of those you mentioned recently was cotton, which was already breaking higher, but now it's even sort of accelerated this move. So what's going on there?
Yeah, I'm using it just from the input cost and inflationary perspective, because obviously cotton is a major source of production or use in all sorts of clothing manufacturing. So it's hit another 10-year high. Yesterday we were limit up on the exchange in New York. As you can see, we retraced 38.2% retracement of the big drop we had during the past decade. You can see that here on slide 11. And I put in the reasons there. There's several, basically a lower US crop right now, where quality is coming down, surging freight costs. We got falling reserves. You can see that here on the inserts as well. That's certified to a cotton stocks monitored by the exchange in New York, into which futures can receive or take delivery. And you can see how that is just completely tanking right now. So supplies are tight. We got the rising costs of synthetics, because energy is moving up as well. So that's also having impact. And then also concerns about flood, not a joke, but it's just incredible how we just have so many different things happening at the same time. Concerns about flooding in China and India, also two major producers. So it's all just adding up to rising costs of your T-shirt over the coming months.
My T-shirt. Okay, let's look at Tesco. Peter, I wanted to preface that there's an interesting speech today from Prime Minister Johnson, Boris Johnson, rounding off the Tory party conference. This is really interesting signals. I don't know if the actual full speech has been flagged, or if we're just getting some quotes from it. But there's a quote that really suggests a very populist angle that he is taking, at least his leadership is taking, as the UK looks at these big supply chain and other shortages. That one of the key focuses has been on truck or lorry drivers and low wages as a possible contribution to the fact why there's not a bigger supply of drivers. And he says in his speech that he wants to see a high wage, high skill, high productivity economy in the UK. And the money quote here is, and there's also talk of a rise in the minimum wage in the UK to almost £9.5 per hour. The quote here is, "We are not going back to the same old broken model of low wages, low growth, low skills, low productivity, all of it enabled by and assisted by uncontrolled immigration." So there you have it. Very interesting signal there. And he's sort of pushing back against the industry that's crying over the need for opening up foreign drivers and visas for them to come in and help alleviate this supply shortage. And so then I want to say, dovetail that with the Tesco results, and if you're seeing any of that addressed and what you're seeing from Tesco in its earnings announcement.
Yeah, I would like to say, John, before I dwell into Tesco's earnings, that I think this is a signal from Boris Johnson is very interesting, because as we've talked about in our team for a couple of years, is that, I mean, there was a reason why Piketty wrote his book Capital, and that was because capital versus labor had won out over a 40-year period of intense globalization and opening up of capital markets. And you had the increasingly use of tax havens and transfer pricing, et cetera. There's a lot of moving parts in that equation, but I think we talked about it yesterday. The low-wage income tracker from Goldman Sachs is suggesting that the low-wage earners in the U.S. are really getting much more in wages. Those wages are expected to be up 6%, and they, for the first time in many, many decades, are actually ahead of the median wage growth for the median worker in the US. So I think there's definitely signs, and I think Boris Johnson's signal here is just further evidence that the pendulum is swinging back in favor of labor versus capital. Anyway, a company that uses a lot of low-wage workers is Tesco, and they have reported this morning ahead of the market open, and they're reducing their dividend their dividends by 20%. Their earnings were actually quite upbeat, and they're raising their full-year profit guidance. Demand remains very strong, and they want to reduce dividend payouts and instead buying back their own shares. So that must be the only interpretation of that is that the management really believes that their share price is very undervalued. Anyway, the signal, I think, is that, you know, you could see from there, from the results, that the, you know, prices on everything is rising and Tesco is just passing it on, and then they have that field day. And I think that is actually what one of the things to couple together with the PepsiCo talks, that demand is still so strong that companies can get away with raising prices and it's still being absorbed by consumers. And that to me suggests that, you know, that will add to the inflation, because they will have this spiral going with the higher wages and companies, you know, having the ability to raise prices. But at one point it will choke off some demand. But for now, it seems like they can hike prices.
Yeah. And then on the wage front, as you mentioned with that Goldman Sachs discussion of 6% rises, they're saying annualized for end Q3 for low wage workers. After, I think it was a 5.2 or 5.3 rise in Q2. Whether it starts to get picked up more consistently in the average hourly earnings data, which has been so disrupted by the various types of workers that have not been and been in work since the pandemic outbreak. So I don't know if the September cycle is early enough for all this to get picked up, but we'll certainly watch that on Friday. And you see the macro calendar on slide 14, and we have an ADP employment change number out of the U.S. today. The last couple of readings have been below 400, so in the 300s, today expected a bit above 400. I think the market could be kind of reactive to that, especially the U.S. yields where they are trying to break higher. If we see a significant beat on the upside, we might get a bit more reactivity around that number than we usually do. As you can also see, we have a Polish central bank meeting today. Nothing expected there, but there was a bit of a bit of excitement when the minutes of the prior meeting were released, and the idea that a 190 basis point hike was thrown around to bring the rate suddenly to 2% all in one go, that was voted down. But it's sort of reset the market's expectations about what may be coming in November. So any hint in the statement that they're considering some sort of larger step change type of hike, if their adjustments to the forecasts economically and inflation in November are adjusted sufficiently higher for that kind of a policy shift. So very interesting there for those trading CEE currencies. Yeah, and then it is all about Friday. It is all about both risk sentiment and to what degree what is driving it, the energy spike, the breakout potential here in longer yields. And it's not just in the U.S. We're also seeing bond yields trading new local highs here. At last I checked, at minus 15 basis points, getting crawling back closer back to those cycle highs and towards the magic 0% yield number in Germany, even before we get the news on the shape of the coalition there, which I'm sure we'll be talking about in the days and weeks to come. That's a wrap for today, folks. Thanks for joining. And we'll be back, of course, tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email marketcall@saxobank.com.